Accession number 12289, reel 2.
Reel 2.
Right. The RSM, who had expected me, as all the others, of course, to be there with all their gear, their rifles and so on, for inspection, the only time that they could normally get the attached personnel for that purpose, blazed out at me, and said, "Sapper Lord, don't you read orders?" I said, "No, sir, I'm not obliged to." He nearly hit the roof, of course, but the officer paying out was my friend of the mornings, who we always saluted, and he smiled at me, and he turned to the RSM and he said, "RSM, it's quite all right. Sapper Lord doesn't have to have anything to do with us at all, except receive his pay and so on, as he is now going to do, and it rather looks as if he's off on a weekend, and I hope you have a nice weekend, Sapper," he said. Paid out, I saluted and went out. The RSM, I noted, was by this time more or less puce, and I don't know whether he took it out on the other fellows afterwards, but anyway, that was that. And so my 6 weeks came to an end at Brecon, and I remember the same RSM as I was about to depart saying, "Where are you going now?" And I said, "To Chatham." He said, "What on earth are you going to do there?" And I said, "Oh, I'm going on a course, and at the end of the course I shall be a Lance Corporal." And he said, "God save the British Army." So at that point I departed hurriedly for Chatham to take up my course with at the School of Military Engineering. And that again was another 6 weeks course. This was the where they told you, oh, you learned all about the practical side of being an engineer clerk. The unfortunate part was, and we were told this when we began the course, and it proved quite true, that all the instruction, all the processes and systems used were applicable in this country but not applicable abroad. And as 99% of us were going abroad, the whole 6 weeks was virtually wasted. But that was just one aspect of the British Army at the time, which one had to get used to. However, we duly passed out there. Then it was down to Kitchener Barracks, still in Chatham, RE Depot. And not long afterwards, on to barracks not far from Andover, where the Rifle Brigade, King's Royal Rifle Corps were, Barton Stacey, and that was the RE Overseas Depot, where we were stationed, I think, for a few weeks, had leave, and duly departed in a group for Egypt.
How did you feel about going to Egypt?
Well, I was rather excited, I think. It was rather more interesting than just going across the channel or something, might have been even more interesting, I suppose, to go further east, but no, I was quite pleased about it. That was fair enough. And also we did know that Egypt might prove to be, in fact it did, only a stepping stone to other places, because a lot of people went to Egypt and then were posted on elsewhere in Middle East Command. So off we went up to London, to the Googe Street underground. He had there this great place underneath there, Googe Street, where there was accommodation right underneath the ground for the night. And then in the morning marched up to St Pancras Station, a special train for us all down to Tilbury. And aboard SS Mataroa, the troop ship, ex-New Zealand line, about 13,000 tonnes, I suppose. And we sailed 1:15, lunchtime, on Sunday, for, that was in the July, we got to the July now, and I was just 20. And away we went down the Thames estuary and all the way around, of course, Channel, Biscay, Mediterranean, all good fun. It was a nice ship, good ship. We had good fun on board. 10 days cruise, really.
Some people give a description of conditions on troop ships as being abominable.
We were lucky, I think. The Mataroa was it was fitted out with bunks and not hammocks, or it wasn't overcrowded. It was certainly nothing like the number aboard that there could have been. And we were more or less, there was a little run round the deck was organised in the mornings, but beyond that there was very little you had to do, a few chores, and the rest of the time you could hang over the rails or do whatever you, they had a little library, I remember, and it was really quite a nice ship.
What were your first impressions of Egypt when you arrived?
Oh, appalling. I thought it was a dreadful dump. When we first arrived there in Port Said, and the because that was what, 10 days out, I suppose this was the end of July. It was terribly hot, and of course the harbour and all round there stank to high heaven, and there were all these rather grubby looking, I'm afraid we called them wogs, running about, where we duly landed, and within no time at all, in training to go down the Suez Canal zone, the military zone, the chaps on the back of the open backs of the carriages, they immediately, we were going to move, the local natives swarmed aboard and started stabbing out with knives and cutting at the equipment and running off with everything they could lay hands on. Which we hadn't really been prepared for. Quite a lot of the fellows who were, it was all like those old fashioned American rail cars where you had an open, what would you call it? What do they call it? Like the back, you know. Sort of, yes, and some of the chaps were out on that, and that they were the ones that copped it. They lost their equipment, which was restored to them, I think, in the main by the military police later, who did catch the natives in question. But it was quite an experience. And then, of course, we were told to draw down the window shutters, because all the way down the canal zone, the natives shied stones and bricks at us. They really were very hostile indeed at that time down the canal zone.
Why do you think that was?
Oh, it was, I don't think they'd ever wanted to be involved in the war. I don't think they regarded the British at any time as their friends. They were the occupiers. And it had drawn a lot of problems about them by virtue, of course, of German bombing and so on during the war. And of course, one has to be fair about this. The ordinary British soldier, finding the natives rather hostile on occasion, retaliated by being anything but pleasant to them. I mean, a lot of the British Army songs and some of the things that were said, and even some of the things that were done, hardly help to create a friendly situation. So there it was. They were really very hostile.
Can you remember any of the songs?
yes. Well, I don't know about that. I'm not a singer, but there was an awful lot about King Farouk. King Farouk, hang your bollocks on a hook. Stanislaw, pull your King Farouk, Barden, and so on and so forth. And then that brought in his queen, Queen Farida, which of course made matters even worse. So, and these things were sung loudly at them. And of course the Egyptians didn't like it, because the tune, which I only found out later, was in fact their national anthem. So it wasn't really a very friendly situation.
What does Barden mean?
Oh, later on. Soon, shortly.
Did the soldiers respond to the stone throwing?
Well, no, we couldn't do anything. We just sat tight on the train and till we got to the other end at Port Suez, where there's a big base transit camp where we were bound for. We went in there, and that was, oh, the protection for that. Barbed wire, searchlights, massive guards, and all armed to the teeth. It was fantastic. I mean, it was Even then, the Egyptians used to get in sometimes and steal things. How on earth they did it, I don't know. But no, base transit at Suez was a real armed camp. But we weren't there very long, because from there you got your being just a transit. You got your posting, and I was posted up to Moasca camp, great big permanent British Army camp at Ismailia, halfway up the canal. To join what a newly formed or even still forming unit, 1269 Stores and Workshops section, which was being formed up for some purpose outside Egypt. We were not then told where, and we hadn't got an officer at that time. We were awaiting one, and Staff Sergeant was in charge, and we really couldn't do very much. We were just there waiting for something to happen. Eventually, we were put onto one or two jobs, and of course I was a Lance Corporal by this time, and so I was put in charge of an enormous Nissen hut, and the idea was that he wanted the sand floor level lowered, presumably to put in a permanent floor. And they'd got all these Egyptian workers, so-called, duly taking all the sand out. Or at least they weren't. They were doing anything but, particularly when I was put in charge of them, because they recognised that someone who hadn't got their knees brown yet, someone who really had no authority at all. And it was rather amusing because at that point, a German, I think he was a German NCO, because there were an awful lot of, they were formed in artisan and works companies in the canal zone, these German prisoners of war, because many of them still hadn't been, although we're now well into, of course, 1947, they were still out there, they still hadn't been sent back to Germany. And they used to do useful work around, they were very smart, and this German NCO, I don't know why he happened to come into this. Perhaps he was going to have something to do with this and that, I don't know. Anyway, he came in and he could see me there hopelessly trying to get these local Egyptians to do some work. And he said in quite good English to me, he said, Corporal, he said, I think, he said, you're finding it difficult to get the... I said, I'm finding it impossible. So he said, right, well, I think something had better be done about this. He said, you go away and get a coffee. There was a little Egyptian coffee stall nearby. And I'll see what can be done. Come back in about 10 minutes, quarter of an hour. When I came back in 10 minutes or quarter of an hour, all those Egyptians were running around like nobody's business. They knew a German NCO who knew his staff, and he'd got them working. He said, now keep them at it. He said, just shout at them. Say you'll murder them if they don't get on with it, you know. And so it was. I managed to get some performance out of them after that.
So you didn't actually see what he'd done.
No, but I mean, he'd obviously gone to town on them, and they knew they had a very healthy respect for the Germans, far more respect for the Germans than they had for us. And there we are. So, in fact, the Germans were very good. We met a lot of them. And on another occasion, there was another German artisan and works company NCO, and I was marching these chaps of ours back to the cookhouse for lunch, and they were messing about, really, marching along through Moascot, which was really like a town. Round the corner came the German. He said, Corporal! He said, and he, in fact, this one was really a German prisoner's MP. They had their own MPs. And he said, I have no jurisdiction over you, of course. But he said, your people who have are just coming along behind me round the corner. He said, I think it would be a good idea if you got your sappers into proper order, don't you? So I thanked him and duly did just that, just in time. So, I mean, really, the Germans were very friendly and very very helpful.
So there was no hard feelings about the war between British and Germans?
No, found none whatever. There was a German orchestra. They were, of course, a musical crowd that they are. Some of them had been players in principal orchestras in Germany, and they used to give performances in the garrison church at Moesca. Really good music. And of course, the poor devils didn't know what to expect when they finally did get back to bombed Hamburg or Hanover or wherever it was. Some of them knew that their families had gone up in it in the British Blitz on the German cities, and others just didn't know what to expect. Anyway, there we were until we duly got our officer and we were all formed up, and eventually, after I suppose a couple of months, the posting came through and we were off to Greece.
Whilst you were in Egypt, were there any civil disorders in the way of riots or anything like that?
Not as bad as that, though we were not allowed outside the zone. We couldn't travel to Cairo, Alexandria, or see the pyramids or anything. We just had to stick around in the military zone. And very frequently a soldier would be found strung up in the native quarters, out of bounds, of course. In every case, and nothing ever happened to anybody that I know of, so long as they stayed in the areas that we were permitted to be in. But if you strayed around, you'd have some poor unfortunate soldier decided he wanted a woman for the night or something and went off, and there you are. Often he didn't get back. So now we were off to Greece, and that meant a Royal Army Service Corps, as it still was then, large tank landing craft to take us across to Piraeus from Portside. And that was a bit choppy because, of course, there's no proper bow, and it, when you go through the Greek islands, it's quite the sea sort of slams up against the prow of the vessel. But anyway, it was quite a nice, quite good. We got to Piraeus and duly moved up to a little place called Roof, R-O-U-F in our alphabet, an edge of Athens suburb. And there we moved into what had once upon a time been a German army camp. Over the road was another one where there was the Royal Army Service Corps. And we duly joined British Troops Greece, which at that time was about 4,000 strong, I think, throughout Greece, and had bases, of course, in and around Athens, at Salonika, and some posts at places like Larissa. And the general idea, of course, was that we were really sort of backing up, showing the flag, because at that time the Greek rebellion, the communist rebellion, was going on in the mountains. And the Greek army, instructed by the British military mission in Greece, which was a separate organisation, was fighting to and trying to beat them. But of course they were backed up across the border by the Yugoslavs, who at that time were behind the Iron Curtain in with Moscow. And it was all a rather nasty business. They got within 30 miles of Athens on one occasion, I remember.
Whilst you were there?
Yes. And the Greeks were getting cold feet about the whole thing.
Did you feel apprehensive?
No, I don't remember. Not at that stage. When we did get apprehensive was was one night, Saturday night, up at, they used to have a dance up at the sort of Naffy Centre in Athens, and on a Saturday night, and we were up there. And during the evening, reports came through, and this was the beginning of the Berlin business in the early spring of 1948. And the reports came through that you know, that the Russians were trying to take over in Berlin, and that they'd been firing on British troops along the canal or canals in the middle of Berlin, and that things were, you know, everything was on major alert. And I remember on the Sunday morning there were lots of pennants flapping around and, you know, on the front of army cars, staff cars, as they whipped around. And it really was for about 24 hours. I think probably from what we heard there and then on active service, as it were, a much nearer thing to war than was ever known back here at home. We listened in on the Sunday evening to the BBC overseas, and of course, as ever, after Big Ben, we got the very quiet, serious, unruffled tones reading the news. But behind it all, I'm quite sure that it was a pretty grim situation for a bit. And of course, from our point of view, with 4,000 scattered troops, without one tank or one gun, and all sorts of broken down little bits of units. There were a few Highland Light Infantry, a few Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry about in little scattered camps. And I mean, we really could have done nothing. If the Yugoslavs had come over the border, that would have been it. It would have been down, I think, to Farallon Bay and the first boat out for presumably back to Egypt. However, it, as we all know from history, it blew over without that happening. So,
what was the attitude of the Greek populace towards British troops?
Oh, very friendly. Very friendly indeed. They couldn't do enough for us. We had a great time as far as the Greeks were concerned.
So you never felt any of them were of communistic?
No. No, not at all. No problem at all with the Greeks. Not in Athens, not where we were. I think, you know, it was some of the mountain Greeks up towards the frontier and so on that were the... I think probably all the really communist Greeks had been drawn into the rebel movement. No, we didn't have any trouble at all. Far from it. It was very pleasant.
Did you mix with them much?
Oh, yes, quite a lot. And I mean, we had all these Greek workers in the in our stores. I mean, most of the work was done by the Greeks. They were really very... a very pleasant crowd. I remember on one occasion some of them, a chap called Campbell and I, we were invited, his store, and he was in charge of one of the stores, and he asked me along, and the two of us went along with, and his Saturday night, his workers down at Piraeus, we went to Piraeus and met them. They wanted to give us a Greek night on the tiles, as it were, and we went to the Greek restaurant and had all this food and drink, and then on to another one, and we were back. I don't know, we got back just about in time for midnight at the camp, and well, they were a wonderful lot. It was a very, very interesting time, and we had the Education Corps put on tours and trips and things. We had a day out, I remember, one Sunday to Corinth in army trucks, and generally speaking it was we had a very good time there.
Did you stay more or less in the same place at Ruth?
Yes, we did all the time. I'd better mention that we were sent over there, formed up as a section and sent to set up the stores and workshops, and had an EMI section with us too, because a whole lot of stores had, army stores had been sent across to Palestine, which of course was in ferment at the time, not long before. The idea then had been that we would probably have been coming out of Greece, because previous to our going there, the rebel movement hadn't been all that strong, and they'd been considering withdrawing from Greece in order to really deal with the Palestine situation. However, the Greek situation had got worse. The Palestine situation was already controlled, so the stores that had been sent over there were duly being sent back, and we were sent to Greece to receive them back. Now, they duly came in on a Norwegian vessel by the name of the Heika, H-E-I-K-A, I think. And the Heika, they'd been very, very poorly packed and stored in the Heika. And somehow or another on the grapevine, the Greeks had learned of this and knew that all sorts of very valuable stuff, like copper piping and that sort of thing, was going to be all loose. And that when it was unloaded, there'd be no real check on what was coming ashore. It would all be in bits and pieces and so on and so forth. And that this was a wonderful opportunity to get hold of some of it. But of course, they couldn't get hold of any of it without managing to bribe some of the British soldiery into cooperation. And I only know of this because as a lance corporal, I was sent down to be a convoy and go along with an RASC driver in one of these trucks. And we went and collected all this material. And we got our stuff. We got, of course, it was a convoy note. And I got in beside him. And then as we drove up through up through Piraeus and the back streets, of Piraeus, and we drove all the way off the main road, and I said to the driver, "Where on earth are we going?" And he said, "Mind your own business." So I said, "Well, it is my business." He said, "No, it isn't. You just stay where you are." And we got up the back streets of Piraeus to some sort of warehouse. The Greek came out, and the driver got out, and there's a lot of shifting going on at the back, which was quite obviously taking what turned out to be copper piping off. Quite a lot of it. Greek copper came round the corner, just grinned and took no further notice. And so when the driver got back in, he said, "Now we'll go off and report present with our, you know, what's in the back of the truck." So I said, "Well, yes, but how on earth? We've got a convoy note. I've got it. I mean, what are we going to, how are we going to allow for the fact of what you've seen fit to dispose of to your own advantage, presumably, from the back?" He said, "You will find that the convoy note we've got, you've got, will fit precisely what we now have on the back." And it proved to be exactly the case. So this was obviously an exceedingly well organized effort to get hold of things which, of course, the Greeks were very short of. And I made some sort of excuse to our officer, Lieutenant Lee, and to said I was exceedingly busy, because at that time I had been pay clerk for the unit, which was composed of something like 40 sappers, and by this time I had been appointed the chief clerk admin. So I said, "Well, look, I'm very, very busy, and could you find one of the others to do convoy duty, because I really didn't want to be involved in it anymore." But anyway, there was a sequel, because I should think quite a fortnight later, as I was marching, our stores were over the railway lines from the camp, and I was going back over to the camp to the cookhouse, but I